Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher. And today I had as my guest, Brad Beyer from Buyer to Buyer Home Inspections. Hi, Brad. How are you today?
John, good day. How you doing?
It's good
to see you, as always.
Yeah, likewise.
You always make me laugh.
Yeah, well, we have a good time, don't we?
Yes, we do. It's what it's all about.
Before we get talking about, and I hope we get there, is talk about home inspections, which you're very good at. You're multi-talented. And the last time I had you on the program, we were talking about Billy Joel and something, an art piece, and you said, don't say anything about it. But I did want to bring up, which I think is fascinating. I've seen some of it. How would you describe your artwork?
Well, it is a different kind. I used to do a lot of art years ago when I was out in Santa Barbara. I did seascapes and portraits with charcoal and Ernest Hemingway.
Okay, let me stop you for a second. What were you doing out in Santa Barbara?
I finished my last year of high school there, which is kind of crazy. I went from Pearson High School, where my grandmother was the first graduating class in 1907, 1908, a Hildreth. So that puts us here 1635 or so. And 8 days into my senior year, around that same nucleus of kids, 30 kids or so, we took off and we went out to Santa Barbara, and I finished my senior year in a high school with maybe 620 kids in my class.
And that must have been kind of...
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. They had a separate building for art. They had a real theater. They had a marching band, an orchestra, a jazz band, and I played drums in the jazz band there, and I started doing art because this guy just saw me and said, would you like to get in the art class? I said, I don't know anything about it. He said, well, come on in. He said, you're from New York, right? Yeah. And they had sculptures in there, 20 foot high. The ceilings were amazing, a big cement floor. And I was like overwhelmed, like, this is high school? You changed buildings to change class in this high school. 10 months there, I probably knew 2/3 of the kids.
Yeah, well,
there.
You're a very friendly
Yeah,
guy.
I fell right into it, and I started drawing a lot. Then you get busy, and I came back home and this and that. And the art just sort of took a sidestep. Fast forward to my brother, Bruce, who was... also multi-talented, wonderful, great father, great brother, great everything. He's just a wonderful guy. I got three great brothers. And for his 65th birthday, I wanted to do him a special thing for John Lennon. And I think I showed you the John Lennon deal,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
And it's made up of just the lyrics. There's no lines in this drawing. I started writing Imagine in his eyeball because that's how John perceived how he saw the world. Nobody saw it like him. It's his own deal. So in his eye, I just wrote the word imagine, and I just took off, and it started forming the rest of his eye, his face, and the glasses. And then was busy, and I left it, and I came back to it, and I said, wow, you know what? I'm going to leave it incomplete like his life because he was only 40 years old, right?
Right,
we all remember that day.
Sure.
So I gave it to my brother for his 65th birthday, and now for his 70th in 3 years, I guess I'm going to have to reunite the Beatles or something.
Now, you were also a theater. You wanted
That's
to
what
be
I went to school for. I was going to be a theater arts professor, teacher, whatever you call it.
Right.
And Vietnam was on and all that. It was kind of crazy times, as you remember. And there was like 82 people looking for the teacher's aide job that day. And
82 people.
Yeah. And they said, if you want to be a teacher, don't stay in Santa Barbara. Go to Kansas or something like that. Pocatello, Idaho.
So did you go there?
No. Dorothy was gone. I went back home to help my dad. And I have on my bucket list, I am going to finish college someday.
Oh, so you didn't finish?
No, I didn't finish. And I loved it. I loved every second. Yeah. I was playing the drums then. I was in jazz bands and Dixieland bands. And I was doing the music. And I was doing the theater. And I was doing the art. And I still kept 18 units of credit. I loved it. It was a great town.
So how much time? 2 years? 1 year?
2.5 years, I think.
You have to finish?
I'm going to finish.
I'm behind you on that.
I'm going to do it. I always told my dad, I said I was going to do it, and he's long gone, but it's just one of my things I want to do.
Well, that's
it's not going to make me any more money. It has nothing to do
with
it.
It's going to give you satisfaction.
Yeah. And now I can do that course where you can go and you do that life training thing. Have you heard that?
No.
Life experience. You could go in, like Empire School does, a couple of the colleges do it, where you just go down and talk and they start asking you questions about history and this and that. I'm a big history nut or whatever. And they say, wow, okay, that counts for X amount of credit. So Maybe it'd make it a little easier. I don't know.
Yeah.
I got a lot to do, John.
It sounds that way. Let me let's talk about home inspections just a little bit.
I'd rather talk about music.
Okay.
Now, I've been through probably 19, 20,000 houses by now. I started this in 89. I didn't have a clue. I was actually...
Were you a contractor prior to
that? We worked with my brother, my dad. Right. Sure. I wouldn't say I was somebody you'd want to go hire to build a house for him at that time because I was a helper. But I picked up a lot. My brother Bruce is a genius with that. But I was working in Shure Aero Devices, and I read this article about home inspections. And at that time, 1989, if you've been in the industry for a while, nobody knew what a home inspection was then as much. They had engineering reports, which is a generic term. I read this article and I said, you know what? I know a ton load of people, but I don't know one home inspector. And I knew that Shure Aero was going to be going down south. And after I came back from Houston, I said, I'm not going down south. Not that there's anything wrong with the south. I just didn't want to go travel with Shure Aero to go down there. So I said, I'm going to look at this franchise thing. Had no money. Went out there, gave him a check that said Goodyear on it. And
Goodyear?
Yeah, rubber. Somehow. And then remember 1990, how bad it was?
Right.
We were going through a really rough time. So I'd walk in and say, you don't want to have a home inspection? And they'd say, are you a buyer? I said, yes, I am. But it's spelled different because there was nobody buying houses. The shops were closing down. So I probably started in a good time because it gave me time for the learning curve.
Right.
And here we are, 18, 19, 20,000 houses later.
Wow.
Still going.
Now, you know, I was recently with a customer who walked into the basement and I said, well, you know, I highly recommend, you know, getting a home inspection. And he said to me, he said, well, I've done enough houses. I can tell. He said, a home inspection is not going to tell me anything that I can't see.
Well, he makes a good point. He makes a good point. If he's has experience with homes, he may be able to see those things that most people wouldn't see on a criminal walkthrough. Because basically, people don't remember that a home inspection is what is visible and accessible. You know, you have a house that's full of furniture and books and everything, and you take all that stuff down before closing, there may be a crack in the wall or this and that. You have to let people know it's what's visible and accessible. So this guy is walking through this going, you know what? I know if something's straight. I can see something to stain. I can see a hole in the wall. And he may have had enough experience for that. But the common person, maybe not, because you just learn. We're like general practitioners. We kind of ask a house to turn its head and cough.
Right.
You know, and if we see something we don't like, we say, you need to go to see that guy or that lady for another opinion. So that's the best way to keep yourself safe on that.
Now, there's another aspect to your business. A lot of times I tell sellers, once they put it on the market, that they should get a pre-inspection.
Smart move.
What do you think about that?
I don't know why more people don't do it. I think it's the smartest thing you could do. And I tell people, look, we'll do a Reader's Digest version. You know, you live in this house for 30 years. You don't need me to tell you that's a hardwood floor with an area rug. We can kind of cut to the chase and say, look, the meat and potatoes of this house is good. And if a guy like me is going to come through here, here's what I would tell you you need to do. Oil tanks, blah, blah, blah. Furnace.
That's it.
Age.
So how can someone get in touch with you, Brad?
I have a website, www.buyertobuyer.com. My email is buyertobuyer@gmail.com, B-E-Y-E-R, number 2, B-U-Y-E-R, or my phone. My cell is the best way, 631-404-2590.
Fantastic. This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back after the short break with Sag Harbor Garden Center co-owner Phil Bucking. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher, and today I have with me the owner, co-owner, I should say, of Sag Harbor Garden Center, Phil Bucking. Hi, Phil, how are you?
Hi, good, John, how are you? Good to see you.
It's great to see you. You know, it's always a pleasure, Phil. So let's start right out that the Sag Harbor Garden Center has a lot of history, mm-hmm. but before we talk about that, let's talk about your history. You grew up in Sag Harbor, right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah. Have you noticed any changes since you were a kid? I know that's kind of a rhetorical question.
Oh, yeah,
question.
Sure. You know, everywhere changes. Everybody notices the traffic, more people. But I think at the root, most of it's the same. particularly for kids growing up, when I'm watching my daughters growing up, they're still on the water, spend a lot of time on the water, going to the beach. And even, you know, through the in the woods, I grew up in a neighborhood called Mount Misery.
Right. Anyone can say I probably know, you know the story? Yeah, but do you know the story behind Mount Misery?
You know, I don't.
Oh. I thought if anybody, you grew up there, because now I've heard different stories, but the one I heard is that during the whaling time, that when they had the ships here, is that they had a lot of the, you know, from coming wherever they were, sick sailors. And so that to put them in quarantine, they put them to Mount Misery.
And, that makes sense.
Yeah, and they were quarantined there, and who knows what happened to them afterwards. Yeah. But that's where that name came from. They'll put them up in
Put them up in the hill.
In the hill.
Yeah. Keep them away from everyone.
That is interesting. Yeah, and Mount Misery has changed quite a bit. You would think
it has. Yeah. And even, you know, I like to hike a lot, so there's still a lot of the hiking trails, and we'll go through there, and you know, the same trails I walked through as a kid, and my kids went through. So a lot of that's the same.
Have you done the Long Pond?
I did, yes.
That goes all the way out to Montauk, correct?
That's different. The Long Pond, there's a trail around the Long Pond, but there's a Palmetto Path goes from Rocky Point to Montauk. And we've done a few small sections of that. Eventually, that would be a nice, fun
that's
thing.
That's like
to
doing
do.
The Appalachian Trail, isn't it?
Right. Well, a friend of mine did that, yeah.
Did he really?
Yeah.
What, do you sleep along the way? Do you take your sleeping bag? Or
you do. You live on the trail. He left in Georgia in March, and you end up in, I think it ends in September, October, if you do the full trail up in Maine. So, yeah.
Well, now how do you, just curious, I'm digressed a little bit. I mean, everybody's so afraid of the ticks. I mean, if you're walking the trails, is there any, do you have any apprehensions about that?
Yeah, somewhat. There's a lot of people that are really, I don't want to use the word terrified, but they don't want to go anywhere near the woods because of the ticks. I don't mind as much. I usually spray the spray on. I put my pants and my socks. We've got a mint oil spray. I usually spray on there. You could spray it all over your body. This year,
does that work?
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know, in the business I'm in with the nursery and everything else, you'd think I'd get more ticks, and I really haven't over the years. Occasionally I get them, but this year was really bad. Early in the spring, too, is particularly bad. And I had more ticks on me than I've ever had. And but I'm still cautious. The mint oil works pretty well. There are DEET products you can use, but a lot of people don't like putting the DEET on. I think that keeps some people away.
But, with the ticks, so you get ticks, you're not fazed by them. You just
not if you could. Yeah, right, exactly. If you could get them off in time. If you can get them off within, I think they say 24 hours, you're okay.
Right.
The heads get lodged in them, and there's actually a little tool we've got at the garden center. It's called a tick key, and it scrapes the tick out of your skin, and it gets the head as well. Because it really burrows it in there. And unless you get like a big red welt or a bullseye on there, wash it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
But I don't want to give any medical advice.
Right.
but they usually go to the clinic.
Go to the clinic. You want to talk about plants, bushes?
Sure.
You can give that advice.
Exactly.
Right.
That's right.
So you graduated George Washington University. Was that for botany?
It wasn't. No, I actually majored in business. And it used to be called IS, Information Systems. They now call it IT. And that's actually how I met my wife. I was selling computer software at the time, living in Boston. I grew up in Sag Harbor. I lived in Boston. We met, worked for this company, and then eventually we moved back to Sag Harbor. We thought Sag Harbor would be a great place to raise a family. And then the opportunity with the Garden Center was there.
So how did that come about?
That came about because that building had been in my family for years. And a lot of the locals will remember that's the place where the teenagers went in the woods. It was an old abandoned building
was
to get in trouble.
Was it woods then?
Yeah, it was pretty overgrown. It's on swampland right next to it.
Right.
And it was just kind of not being used for anything for years. And there was a contractor who started to work on renovating the building. That fell through. So then my grandfather, my father, and I was in high school. I was kind of a gopher, but lifted the building up, renovated it, and it was a garden center. There was a woman who was running it for about, I think, about 10 years, and then she retired. And we had this opportunity to come back to Sag Harbor, and we opened a garden center. And it was something we always loved, the gardening part. As far as you know, we were in for a rude awakening, how little we knew and how much our customers did know. But it was great. It really, you
so
know.
So you got a quick education. But yeah, we took Cornell.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we spent some time with Cornell taking some classes. And after a couple of years, we got the hang of it.
Right. And you're quite knowledgeable. I love any time I stop in there and ask you a question, you've got it down to
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
No, yeah. But it's true. No, and you and Diane are fabulous, you know. No. So speaking of which, have there ever been any times that you've had second thoughts about the business? I mean, like, okay, it's great when you start out. Mm-hmm. It's good. And then all of a sudden, you know, sometimes reality kicks in.
It's hard. I have a newfound appreciation for farmers. It's very seasonal. You're very dependent upon the weather. I wouldn't say second thoughts. You know, sometimes you think about what if I did something else, but I would, no, my kids were down there every day. I love when I'm out there. I've got a couple of months where it's very stressful and hectic, very busy, but that's how it goes. You know, about a third of our business is in the month of May, so it's very compact. And then Christmas trees as well, so we have something to fill out the year. And that's a great time of year, too, you know, with selling people Christmas trees. Most everybody coming in is in a great mood. So, you know, you're in a positive environment.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, you guys, that's the other thing I love about you. You always have a positive spirit about you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I know you have various events that take place during the year. Mm-hmm. What are some of those?
We have the big one is to kick off the season. We've got an annual petting zoo. And we began that for a grand opening, actually, in 1996. And we've been doing it every year. It takes place the Saturday before Easter every year at noon. And it's turned into a fantastic event. There are all kinds of animals. The Cornell Animal Farm brings kinds of animals. Yeah, llamas and the baby goats, pigs, ducks, chickens. You name it, and it's a lot of fun. We get a huge crowd.
Aren't you afraid they're going to eat some of the plants and bushes?
No, but the cats don't like them.
Oh.
Yeah, they're all caged and they take care of the animals.
Oh,
I don't take care of that. And then we used to have a. We had a lot of fun with Halloween. We would do pumpkin decorating contest, and there's a big event in Sag Harbor. It was Ragamuffin Parade, it's called. And it would end at the Garden Center, but it outgrew us. So for the past, 10, 15 years, it's been taking place at the Custom House grounds because there's a big grassy yard there, and you've got the museum right next door where they have a haunted house. So that kind of turned over there, and then throughout the year, we'll do field trips. A lot of the schools, mainly Sag Harbor Elementary School, but we've had other schools over the years come in, and the kids will plant something. And
that's fabulous, Phil.
Yeah, yeah.
So where are you located?
We are at 11 Spring Street in Sag Harbor. We're across from the municipal parking lot behind Fisher's, and we are in the old Railroad Depot building. It's on the corner there. You'll see it. It says at the old train depot, and we're kind of tucked away there, but we've got pretty much everything you need for your garden.
Fantastic. So if they want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Our phone number is 631-725-3345. You can check us out online, sagharborgarden.com, sagharborgarden.com. And you can also email us at info@sagharborgarden.com. Or just stop by. We're open every day on Spring Street.
Phil Bucking, it's been a pleasure having you on the program.
This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back after this short break with our next guest, Janice Hayden, who is the president of the Hamptons chapter of LIBOR. Welcome back to Real Life. This is your host, John Christopher, and today I have as my guest Janice Hayden. I'm so happy you made it today, Janice. Before we talk about LIBOR, let's talk about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Islandia, which is also considered Central Islip. Great town. I went to public schools or private schools first, and then the public school and high school. Great education, great sports, and grew up in a large family.
A large family. How large?
I have three sisters and an older brother, And yeah, it was a great, great location.
Let's do a shout out to them. Hey, guys.
Hi, guys.
Perfect, perfect. So before becoming an agent, what line of work were you in before that?
I was an accounting manager, probably for one of the fastest growing companies on Long Island, Symbol Technologies. They were the founder of the barcode scanners.
Oh, wow.
And great experience. I worked with the engineering group, a very diversified group, foreign engineers as well as local engineers, and went through several mergers and acquisitions.
So what prompted you, what attracted you out here to the Hamptons? And secondly, why real estate?
Well, in 2004, like most companies, they were starting to get rid of the G&A, the general administration. And through the mergers and acquisitions, we knew it was a matter of time before we were going to be purchased. And Motorola did purchase Symbol. So at that point, I already teed myself up to go into real estate. Always had a desire for it. I purchased some of my own homes and enjoyed the process. And I'm a people person, so I thought this would be a great occupation for me to explore.
Oh, that's great. So what brought you out here to the Hamptons? I mean, were you doing the real estate up island at the time and then you moved out here?
I actually was living in Center Mariches, which was the two, three towns over from West Hampton Beach. So when I started real estate, I started in West Hampton Beach selling. My office was right on Main Street.
So now you've moved to Southampton, correct?
That's correct. So I slowly gravitated east as I got to know the Hamptons better. I enjoyed Southampton tremendously, but also kept a foothold in the West Hampton area.
Oh, good. So we'll ask some questions later about that if we have time. But I wanted to get into talking about LIBOR. First of all, what exactly is LIBOR?
LIBOR has 23,000 members with 12 chapters going from Queens to Montauk area. And the board is over 106 years old, was founded in 1910.
Wow. Now, it's an acronym, correct, LIBOR?
Yeah, Long Island Board of Realtors.
Okay.
Correct. And it's recognized as a mega board and has strengths in numbers. A lot of legislation we get involved with when we feel that the buyers or sellers are going to incur maybe hiccup that may affect the market. We get involved to see if this is a good thing or a bad thing. If we don't think it's going to help the market, we fight against the legislation that may prohibit the proper flow.
So you have people that go up and lobby up in Albany for this?
That is correct, yes. Mm. And we actually do fundraisers so we can get them to go and lobby for us.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So tell us, what are some of the benefits, especially for agents? I know a lot of the agents that are on the east end of Long Island compared to, say, going across the canal are not members of either LIBOR or there's another organization called HAMFRA. That why would somebody that's, you know, doing their day-to-day operation of real estate, why do you think it would be beneficial for them to join LIBOR?
One of the biggest benefits is actually MLSLI.com, which is the multiple listing we provide for Long Island. And it actually is a site that feeds Zillow and Trulia. And we put the homeowners' homes on it, which gives it the visibility not only locally but nationally. So anyone could go in on the site and find the seller's home and have a good insight of the inventory that's on Long Island. So that's one of the biggest benefits. The other benefits is that if you belong to the board, you can belong to the credit union. We provide mediation.
Now, in what respect mediation? You mean if there's a disagreement between some of the agents?
That's correct. There could be a disagreement among the agents, possibly a buyer, seller. They can provide us insight to how to pursue if they feel they agree with us that we have a case. So they do provide legal counsel as well. We also have networking events, which is a lot of fun. I mean, it's a fun board to belong to. We make sure that we work hard. We also want to provide the fun that goes with it. So the board
is important to have some
it's
fun.
Fair. It is. And the board is great that way. They have board meetings once a month. So the officers do go. And we all learn about issues that could come up that can affect our local area or all of Long Island. So those are important things to know. And we also, to belong to this board, we give back to the community. So we're not just realtors. We provide other things to the community as well. Such thing as the United Way, we've gotten involved with.
Are you involved in that also?
I am. We're helping the veterans, training them how to build homes. And then once they learn how to build homes, we provide them jobs with a builder.
Wow.
So they're not homeless. They're not lost in the shuffle. We want to make sure that they come back. They served us, and there's 136,000 veterans on Long Island. It's nice to know that we're taking care of them.
That's very admirable. I was going to say, since you know the area west of the canal, especially the market there, like Quag and Remsenburg, and you, as you mentioned earlier, West Hampton, how is that market doing, especially in the political climate that we have today?
I find it's doing well. Some of the buyers I'm finding, the quality of life, and maybe it's part of the recession that caused people to think twice. You work hard, and all of a sudden now you're working even harder to get back what you may have lost or lost momentum, are not so much enjoying the long car ride they once did. Some are fine with it. Some don't want to deal with it. So that's where certain areas like West Hampton, Hampton Bays, East Quag have gotten noticed, being that they feel, you know what, it's close enough to the city for me to hop on the LIE or Sunrise and I can scoot back home. Well, so they're exploring those locations.
Well, I think that's one of the bennies, we'll say, of that area. I've been in that area, and the lifestyle is a little bit different than going east of the canal.
It is a different lifestyle. I probably less populated. You're not going to see as much traffic, more beach, you know, oriented. The villages are a little smaller, not as large as Southampton, not as large as East Hampton.
Right. So how can someone get in touch with you, Janice?
They can get in touch with me through email, jhayden@halsted.com. My office is also on Main Street in Southampton, 31 Main Street. That's probably one of the best ways to reach me.
Fantastic. Janice, it's been a pleasure having you on the program.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, associate broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.